And welcome, friends, to the Generations broadcast. Kevin Swanson, your host with you. Also, Adam McManus from theworldview.com, our co-host on this edition of the program. And today we're going to talk a little bit about the interaction of tyranny and anarchy. As we've talked about this before, we want to apply a biblical view of ethics to this particular subject. Now, first off, I just thought this was interesting. 24 million AK-47s in America. That's just a data point I pulled off of this article from the Washington Examiner, August 4th edition. 400 million guns in America, 1.2 guns for every man, woman, and child. That includes, you know, the 14-month-old kids. They all get 1.2 guns. 1.2 guns for every man, woman, and child in America. That's a lot. It's a lot. 24 million AK-47s, AR-15s in America, and they don't use them for hunting. That's twice as many guns carried by all 10 of the top largest armies in the world, Adam.
It's a lot of guns.
24 million AK-47s, AR-15s in America. You add China, India, United States, North Korea, Russia, Pakistan, Iran, South Korea, Vietnam, and Egypt. Put all the 10 largest armies together. We still got twice as many guns in terms of AK-47s, AR-15s, as possessed by the 10 top armies in the world. I mean, that, you know, that's right here in America. And that's Billy Bob and Jimmy Joe.
Yeah, and I saw Billy Bob on a recent YouTube video I was watching. I have apparently cycled into watching porch pirate videos where people have these Ring doorbells that video everything that goes on their doorstep. Increasingly, people have become more and more brazen and are stealing Amazon packages, especially around Christmas time, right off of people's front porches. One gentleman, I use that word very loosely, was stealing a package off another guy's front porch, didn't realize the guy was home, and the guy stepped out with, I think, an AR-15. The thing was almost as tall as he was. He wasn't pointing it at him. He just had it next to him, and he calmly said, "Put that back."
At that point, yes, sir. Absolutely, sir.
Needless
yes,
where to would say, you like it, sir? Kevin, that really got the thief's attention, yeah. And as he snuck off down the driveway, I know he was probably praying that he didn't get shot in the back, but the man just wanted to defend his property. Now, that's small T tyranny. That's not big T tyranny. Big T tyranny is something I saw firsthand in terms of the results in Cambodia. I was over there on a trip with the Bible League with about 10 other Christian radio talk show hosts with Salem Communications when I worked at KSLR in San Antonio for 13 years. I did a daily three-hour program, and we looked at the need for Bibles in Cambodia, interviewed a number of people there, came back, presented the need to the audience, and asked them to consider giving financially all across the country when we returned. When I was there, I saw firsthand what was captured in the film Killing Fields, starring Sam Waterston, dated to 1984. Between 1975 and 1979, horrifically, the Khmer Rouge, led by Pol Pot, systematically killed 1.5 to 2 million people. Now, this wasn't long ago and far away. This was 1975 to 1979, a whole lot more recent than Nazi Germany and its crush of its people, or even for that matter, Russia and what happened there. I saw these killing fields where some of the actual clothing of those who had been killed in these near these mass graves, shot to death, hacked to death with machetes, and then bulldozed into these giant mass graves. I toured museums where hundreds of the skulls that had subsequently been exhumed were now on display in glass cases. Throughout the countryside, the Khmer Rouge emptied the city, forced Cambodians to relocate to labor camps. There were mass executions, forced labor, physical abuse, malnutrition, disease was rampant. They starved people. It was hideous. It was fairly recently compared to Nazi Germany, and that's what really stands out. And it just makes you think about the future of America. Where is all of this going? Where are we headed? We've got the small t tyranny, which is a debacle in terms of the breakdown of the American family, in terms of the skyrocketing increase of fatherlessness and all of its terrible social ripple effects in the culture. More teen pregnancy, more school dropouts, more sexual activity before marriage, recidivism. But now we're seeing in America a knock on the door of big T tyranny, don't you think?
A quarter of the population wiped out by these tyrants. That would be 80 million citizens of the United States. It's hard to imagine that 80 million citizens in the United States would be wiped out by tyrants. But, you know, most people would say it'll never happen here. Think I'll have another beer. That, I think, is a response of the average person. It could never happen here. Will anarchy meet more tyranny? Will tyranny stir up more anarchy? Will there be revolution on the streets in America? Will America turn into the killing fields of Cambodia or the Bolshevik revolution of the Soviets or the Nazi revolution? Is America turning into a banana republic, edging towards the typical chaos you find in nations that were not run by law, but by the whim of the mob, or by the whim of petty dictators and unrestrained bureaucracies? It can never happen here, all except for the fact that FBI did raid the residence of a previous president, Donald Trump, over the last several days. With that exception, it's impossible that America could turn into a banana republic. Be back with more in just a moment on the Generations Broadcast.
What happens when a culture that was established and guided by biblical principles abandons the faith and seeks to live by its own wisdom? In his latest groundbreaking work, Epic: The Rise and Fall of the West, Kevin Swanson unfolds the dramatic history of Western civilization, highlighting the phenomenal impact that Jesus Christ and his people have had upon the thought, culture, and institutions of the Christian West, as well as tracing the slow but devastating decline of Western civilization and the key factors that have led to our spectacular fall over the centuries. A sobering narrative of gospel hope, this book urges its reader to greater fervency in the work of discipleship and the development of an international vision for the church. This is truly a must-read for any Christian seeking to understand the times and seasons in which we live. You can claim your hardcover copy of Epic: The Rise and Fall of the West by visiting generations.org/store today. That's generations.org/store.
And we're back on the Generations Broadcast. It'll never happen here. Think I'll have another beer. You know, I wrote that back when I was about 18, 19 years of age. I was writing poetry back then. I remember I was reacting to.
That was original to you. I thought you were quoting some country western song.
No, I wrote that some 28 years ago or something. I was 19 years old and I was just responding to the Pol Pot thing and the Nazi thing, the Bolshevik revolutions, the communist scourge in the Soviet Union, is concerned with all of that and thinking, it'll never happen here. Think I'll have another beer. And, you know, I think that's the attitude of most Americans.
Now, that wasn't your opinion. You thought that was the opinion of a lot of Americans who could care less or who didn't think it would impact.
Yeah, that's
them.
It. 87,000 IRS agents knocking on your door, my friends. Shall we expect more raids in your home, more audits, given that the president of the United States or the ex-president of the United States, Donald Trump's home in Florida, raided by the FBI over the weekend? And the main concern seems to be that there was a political motive operating. But Joe Biden says, I didn't know anything about it. Hard to believe. It's hard to believe, isn't it?
I don't think that passes the smell test. Here we've got Attorney General Merrick Garland, his appointee, authorizing the Department of Justice and the FBI to do a raid, taking 15 boxes of classified materials from Donald Trump's personal home, and President Biden didn't know anything about it? Come on. This is going to be his, presumably, primary rival, according to the CPAC latest poll. It's nearly 70% approval rating if he decides to run. Joe Biden has said he welcomed the chance to run again against Donald Trump. So there's so much going on here in terms of the politics. Even a first grader could figure out Joe Biden knew exactly what was about to go down and was not surprised by this at all. I think Republicans who have expressed their dismay, and there have been many, have accurately said that this has led to the weaponizing of the Department of Justice. I'm not sure this is about justice as much as it is trying to shoot as many bullets into his extremities so that he is damaged property, as if what happened by the media and what happened through these two impeachments weren't enough. They want to really cripple Donald Trump so that he doesn't even think about throwing his hat into the presidential ring by tarnishing him now with the raid and whatever juicy tidbits they might be able to unearth in the days ahead.
The big concern for conservatives, for Christians, for citizens of the United States is that this is a precedent. They haven't seen anything like this in 234 years of this nation's history. And America has been a somewhat stable, free nation in which there's not been the banana republic tendency to knock off your competitors to keep the ruling regime in power. This sort of thing isn't happening in America over 230 some years. But now it seems that this is a new precedent for the United States of America. We're entering into a period of unrest, of instability for the constitutional republic that we have appreciated, the gift from God, the gift of freedom, a gift of security, a gift of stability, a nation that has been singularly blessed by God with prosperity, with liberty, with a sense of stability and a respect for law and order. And that, my friends, is out the window at this point as America is turning into another banana republic, where they knock off their competitors just to keep the ruling regime in power. I think I counted revolutions, coups, and this sort of thing happening in African and South American nations over, say, the last 20, 25 years, sometimes 4, 5, 6 of these a year. So this is not unusual for unstable nations that you find in places like South America and Africa, but now here in the United States, we're starting to find the lack of respect for the rule of law.
Mark Levin, the former chief of staff to U.S. Attorney General Ed Meese, who is now a very respected author and radio talk show host, called in to Sean Hannity on Fox News Monday night to give his reaction to the breaking news at that point that the FBI agents had executed a search warrant at Trump's Mar-a-Lago residence. And he said, first of all, as a former chief of staff to a United States Attorney General, we would never have done this ever. Number two, it's 90 days before the midterm election, so that's outrageous. Number three, Levin said, everybody pretty much knows that Donald Trump is going to run in the Republican primary for president. So you have a sitting president who wants to run against him, and his attorney general is pretty much trying to take him out. And that, I think, puts it into very helpful perspective.
Trump's lawyers were not allowed to oversee the raid, increasing the possibility of agents planting contraband or false reports. Very bad. This looks very, very bad. And I'm not sure the American citizens are going to receive this report well. New York Post reported that boxes of documents retrieved contained documents and mementos from Trump's presidency, including letters from Barack Obama, Kim Jong-un, and other correspondents with world leaders. A legal source said that the boxes had been packed up by the General Services Administration, shipped to Mar-a-Lago when Trump left office in January of 2020. Trump's attorneys, led by Evan Corcoran, has been cooperating fully with the federal authorities on the return of the documents to the National Archives and Records Administration, according to sources. But the FBI got the jump on it and did not allow Trump's attorneys to be present when the raid was happening. Senator Mike Lee also used the phrase, the FBI and the Biden administration crossed the Rubicon. A very important phrase.
I love that reference. Julius Caesar, of course, crossed the Rubicon River with his army, starting a civil war in Rome. And that has now become the phrase for the notion of a point of no return. They've crossed the Rubicon. They cannot go back. They cannot undo this. And it's going to, I think, deepen the divide between the 50% and the 50% of Americans, Democrat, Republican, that are already there Mike Lee, Senator from Utah, asked some very pointed questions, current member of the Senate Judiciary Committee, of course. He asked, did Attorney General Merrick Garland personally sign off on this action? Two, why break into the safe at Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, which they did, rather than seize it, take it into custody, and seek a warrant to open it? That would seem to be the proper procedure. Three, why execute a search warrant rather than seek the items through an informal process like a subpoena? Four, if this is genuinely about presidential records, why would the former president, who was in charge of declassifying documents, be subject to prosecution for retaining custody of the same documents? Five, if this, as Senator Lee, is the product of the growing political weaponization of federal law enforcement agencies, shouldn't all, and this is, goes to your point, shouldn't all Americans be outraged by the Democrats' plan to hire an additional 87,000 IRS agents? And number six, just six of the eight, how is this aggressive action defensible in light of the FBI's and the Department of Justice's treatment of Hillary Clinton, who was never subjected to such an invasive intrusion of privacy, even though she clearly mishandled classified material and destroyed evidence?
Does seem to be a bit of hypocrisy going on there. But again, going back to Mike Lee's response relating to the Biden administration crossing the Rubicon. Yeah, Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon in 49 BC, unleashing that unprecedented era of bloodshed and civil war for the Romans. I'm going to say, you know, tens of thousands, even maybe hundreds of thousands of people killed over the next, say, 30, 40 years, including those killed by his nephew Augustus. Caesar's popularity had soared. He was presenting something of a threat of power to the Senate, to Pompey, who held power down in Rome, and the Senate was calling upon Caesar to resign his command. Instead, Julius Caesar crossed the Rubicon, and that was, of course, what touched off the civil war that destroyed so many lives. And that's the sort of thing that Mike Lee is seeing happening here with the Biden administration crossing the Rubicon. Politically, according to TheHill.com, this is a plus for Trump. Now, TheHill.com is not necessarily a conservative magazine, but House Minority Leader Kevin McCarthy suggested that Attorney General Merrick Garland preserve your documents and clear your calendar. So as a warning that the Republicans are coming after the Democrats. This is going to be a fight. It's interesting also in this article, this guy goes on and says schisms are dividing the nation. This massively polarized response to the raid on Trump's property wasn't surprising, but the episode still feels like another lurch towards national destabilization. Good point there. This is, again, TheHill.com. Those who see a nefarious action against Trump by an imagined deep state are signaling they have lost any faith in instruments of law, so on and so forth. This reveals a dangerous hollowing out of common ground in the American government. The broad theme has been widely reported. Earlier this year, the National Archives and Records Administration said it found classified documents among 15 dub boxes. But he says NARA made no secret of the fact that it contacted the Department of Justice about the matter, a move that appears to be the genesis of the current probe. But that information does not really answer the question of to why the FBI should be raiding Mar-a-Lago and breaking into Trump's safe at this point. So, again, this is, you know, a fairly, I would say, nonpartisan group that is drawing these conclusions. While turmoil swirls around Trump, Biden and his aides have been at pains to affirm a wall of separation between the White House and the current investigation, which, as I said, is hard to believe. Well, these are the sorts of comments made by TheHill.com. Certainly, this is not going to add anything to the unity of the nation at this point. I'm seeing the schism develop even more severely between the two parties. This is going to be an all-out war, at least in the political realm. Don't know if this is going to devolve into a civil war, but certainly within the political realm, there's a war afoot.
You referenced NARA. That's the National Archives and Records Administration. They're the ones that earlier this year found classified material among the 15 boxes retrieved from the Florida property. So this is not, to be clear, the first time they've gone to Mar-a-Lago. This is the second time. It's much more dramatic. It's much more invasive, but it is indeed the second time.
Yeah, exactly. And so I'm seeing something of a destabilization of the Republic. And I think we should be somewhat concerned about this. That this is the beginning of a breakdown of the political unity of the nation And again, we've warned of the possibility of revolutions, counter-revolutions coming to America. Now, that would not be good for anybody. America and Western nations have been somewhat stable for many, many years, but political destabilization means economic destabilization. General unrest can provide the context for civil war, violence, unsafe and unsavory conditions for everybody. Now, I was thinking of Proverbs 24:21 as I was thinking through these issues, and I think as Christians, we need to be prepared for a national destabilization. And it's verses like Proverbs 24:21 that will help us here, Adam. My son, fear the Lord and the king. Boy, I like that. I think if there's anything America needs more than anything else is to fear the Lord, to fear God, first and foremost. And then also is to reverence the king. By the way, Peter brings that out as well in 1 Peter, that we are to reverence the king, render due respect for the rule of law, the constitutional republic, and those that are in authority. See, we need to respect these things. Now, evidently, the existing structures seem to be less and less respectful of the Constitution of the United States. Certainly, we're seeing some violations of the Constitution of the United States over and over again. It doesn't matter the arm of government that is involved. It seems that at every point, the Constitution of the United States is not being respected, which means the rule of law and a destabilization is almost right around the corner for us. But Proverbs 24:21 says, fear the Lord and the king, and do not associate with the rebellious. Now, the King James Version renders that those given to change, which means those given to revolution, revolutionaries. Do not associate with the revolutionaries. I think that to be a better translation, those given to change are the revolutionaries. My son, fear the Lord and the king, and do not associate with the revolutionaries, for they will bring sudden destruction. Who knows what ruin they can bring? Now, that's somewhat of a paraphrase of Proverbs 24:21 and 22. I encourage your families to go over this passage because I think it's going to have imminent application to America and to so many nations around the world as we enter into a period of massive political destabilization in the years to come. That's the direction we're headed, my friends. Now, again, the principle is fear the Lord, fear God and the king. Do not associate with the revolution. And boy, if there was an admonition for anybody, whether it be those who are hanging out with the National Socialists in the 1940s or hanging out with the Bolsheviks in the 1914s, boy, that passage applies, doesn't it?
It does. And it's all about whether you respect the authority of God's law, whether you respect the authority of our founding fathers having formed the Constitution and this republic. Again, despite what the Democrats consistently say that we live in a democracy, we do not live in a democracy. They would like to believe we do. It is a republic. It's a representative form of government. It's not a pure democracy. Because a pure democracy, as you've pointed out, is revolutionary by its very nature.
Right. And pure democracies like mob rule opens the way for chaos, change, and blood on the streets, which we're warned against in Proverbs 24:21 and 22. It's a rejection of stability. It's a rejection of law. It's a rejection of the Constitution. Now, this kind of thing has happened through revolutions in Europe, in Germany, Soviet Union, elsewhere. They've done untold damage in Europe, and now it's coming to America. There's an anarchy which refuses to submit to God's law and to the law of the land. And there's a tyranny which refuses to submit to the constitutional law and to God's law. The bureaucracy tends to turn into a tyranny which refuses to submit itself to constitutional law. They operate under the rubric of pure power, pure manipulation, draconian, totalitarian, arbitrary power over the populace. And that's the sort of thing we don't want to happen here in the United States. Now, let me give you just a little bit of history because I think this is important. Erwin Lutzer brings this thing out in one of his recent books. I can't remember the name of it.
I believe it's We Will Not Be Silenced.
That's it. And he warns us of this. He goes back to Nazi Germany. He says, you know what? It can happen here. Don't have another beer. Okay. All right. So that was Erwin Lutzer. I think we interviewed him a year or two ago on the book. And he's got a point. Now, again, I think we need the humility to acknowledge that America is in trouble and that America is headed for disaster. Now, I did a little research because I wanted to say, okay, you have the KGB Hitler's SS, the secret police, breaking into political competitors' offices and killing the political competitors, this sort of thing. That kind of thing was happening often in the Soviet Union and Nazi Germany. Now, could this thing happen here? Could the FBI turn into the KGB? Yes, they could. Now, that's interesting. I just want everybody to understand the seedbed of Germany in the 1920s and the seedbed of Russia in the early 1900s, producing the tyrannies of Nazism and communism. At the turn of the century, Berlin became the Sodom of Europe. Between 1896 and 1931, a German anarchist named Adolf Brand published the world's first magazine dedicated to homosexuality and what he called self-definition, which was the beginning of the transgender sexual anarchy movement. Okay, that started in Germany. Berlin, the 1920s, here was described by an official Berlin website. You can see this online. But here's the what was happening in the 1920s. New movements cropped up in the theater, music, literature, and fashion. The permissiveness of the movement enabled queer culture and feminism to make great strides. Now, this is how you get to World War II. This is how you get to killing Jews. This is how you get to totalitarianism. Okay, so if you want to know how you get to the 1930s, take a look at Berlin in the 1920s. Now, again, this is a quote. This isn't me commenting on this. This is a German website saying, yeah, we were great back in the 1920s. We were all about immorality. Now, it is arguably in Berlin that the new woman was born. She is defined by her short hair and hemline, and makeup. The sass and sophistication associated with the city is aptly represented in the ironic rays of one of Marlene Dietrich's arched eyebrows. Josephine Baker's globe-sweeping Charleston dance is introduced into audiences in 1926 in the Nelson Theater. Besides the Charleston, Berlin also welcomes the shimmy, the two-step, to its proliferating dance halls. Berlin becomes synonymous with the glamour, intrigue, and bold values associated with the Roaring Twenties. The sharp, raw humor for which Berliners are known finds expression in the era's satirical popular song, cabaret performances full of wit, impudence, and lust. Otto Dix captures the zeitgeist in his painting of cabaret dancer and actress Anita Berber, famous for eccentric behavior, erotic performances, friendship with intellectuals such as writer Klaus Mann. The aesthetic is bold, shocking, subversive. Again, the introduction of homosexuality, big at time in the 1920s. Darwinism was strong with Kaiser Wilhelm II. This led to World War I, of course. But Robert Beachy has written a book called Gay Berlin. He was interviewed recently on NPR. Again, this is not the piece they allowed him on. Written by a right winger. This is just sort of an ordinary historian, probably on the left side of things. But he admits that the National Socialists, the Nazis, got their start in homosexual bars, largely inspired by Hitler's best friend. Adolf Hitler's best friend was Ernst Röhm. Okay, so just everybody understands this. This is pretty common knowledge, okay, that this is how the National Socialists get started. They get started in gay bars, largely inspired by Hitler's best friend, Ernst Röhm. Röhm was the head of the largest Nazi militia, the SA, by far the most charismatic figure among the early Nazis. This homosexual brought in many new members to the Nazi party. He was promiscuous as a homosexual on the streets of Berlin. I mean, he was leading the homosexual movement in Berlin. He was actually tried in court for violating the law. His trial was broadcasted. Everybody in Germany knew about this Nazi. He's a homosexual. And Hitler didn't care, but rather promoted him. Again, this according to Robert Beachy, writes a book called Gay Berlin. So there are tons of homosexual Nazi sympathizers who joined the SA, joined the party, members of the movement. But there was a political fallout between the military and Rome's revolutionary militia. And this resulted in Röhm and many of his homosexual friends getting killed. So that's pretty much the history of what happened. But remember, the seedbed of Nazism, the seedbed of Adolf Hitler and the Third Reich is homosexuality. That's how you get to the Nazi nightmare. That's how you get to World War II. One form of anti-God immorality is traded for another, and these guys bring destruction down on the world. Now, multiply that seedbed by 10,000 and you get to where we are today in America.
And you've got RuPaul.
So I just want that to sink in. Now you say, well, okay, so that's what happened in Nazi Germany. Now, what happened in Russia? Well, the radicalization of the young generation in Russia happened by the universities, Both Lenin and Stalin were radicalized in their college years. And it's interesting, both were radicalized by reading a certain book called What is to be Done by Nikolai Chermyshevsky. This book was written in the 1860s. The book tells the story of a woman who wants to be set free from family ties, live an independent life. She wants to be set free from monogamous and heterosexual social norms. And she seeks a utopian society where there are equal rights between all women and men as the foundation for a utopian society. The novel inspired several generations of revolutionaries in Russia, including populists, nihilists, and Marxists. Big book, very important book in the history of mankind. It's called What is to be Done? This was precisely the seedbed in which most young people are educated today. For some reason, it's always homosexuality, transgenderism, and feminism that are the most important seedbeds for social revolutions and moral anarchy in this world. And I'm not sure we could have developed a better seedbed for total chaos, revolution, and whatever nightmare may be ahead than what we have established today. Friends, it starts with where Lenin, Stalin, and Hitler started. It starts with the seedbed of homosexuality. It starts with the seedbed of feminism. It starts with a seedbed of utopianism and a anarchical autonomous view of throwing off all of God's laws, traditional moral structures, and bringing in a utopia, which turns out to be a hell on earth. That, my friends, is where we are headed as a society. And I don't think that's an exaggeration, Adam.
It's astounding to hear you summarize it and to connect the dots, really, between the total, not just disregard for God's law, but a trampling upon God's law and a rejection of every aspect of our design, that we are designed to be with one person of the opposite sex for a lifetime of monogamy and fidelity and commitment. This whole homosexual movement and feminism and a rejection of God's design, to think that it was the seedbed for these horrific revolutions that led to literally millions of people dying is horrifying to think about in terms of how much more depraved our culture is in America today, 2022, compared to where it was in the 1920s in Germany or the 1900s in Russia.
Sexual anarchy, social anarchy, tyranny, they combine as a nightmarish triad to bring about a hell on earth. That's what happened in Nazi Germany. That's what happened in the Soviet Union. But here's my question. Will the nightmare of the 21st century compare with the nightmare of the 20th century? And how will it compare? I'll leave you with that question. You can read the full story of the rise and fall of the Christian West in my new book, Epoch. By the way, the second edition coming off in about 6 or 7 weeks from now. And you can get a copy at our website, generations.org. This is Kevin Swanson inviting you back again next time as we continue to lay down a vision for the next generation.